I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast, with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris, trying to compensate for the delay by hitting the beat, but I'll never do it.
You'll never do it because there's a few millisecond latency.
Yeah, but I tried to go early to hit the beat.
Well, we talked about this last week and it wasn't interesting then. And it isn't interesting now either. We just had a fascinating pre-show discussion about the energy efficiency of tube-based...
That was fascinating, but my latency conversation isn't. How dare you?
No. So thanks to everyone who indulged us for that. You can join us and listen live, of course, if you wish to have those kinds of conversations in your life. However... we are going to talk about more news-based things this week because The Guardian has written that the Gloucester-based bookseller The Book Depository is going to close this month. And what's the tech angle, you asked? Well, I'm glad you asked, listener. The tech angle is twofold. The first fold is that there wasn't a lot we wanted to talk about this week. And second fold is that the company was owned or is owned and has been owned by Amazon since 2011. It was set up to rival Amazon itself in 2004. Do you remember 2004, Ian?
Not well, Nate, to be honest. No. I mean, that predates our relationship, doesn't it? So
by 2 years, yeah. I mean, it was a good year for heavy metal.
Was it?
Dream Theater's Live at Budokan. Probably one of the best live albums ever recorded by any band ever.
If you happen to like live albums, which personally I don't.
Even if you don't, the production quality is staggering, and the length and breadth of the set was fantastic. And also Germany's Finest, Necrophagist, of course, released Epitaph, which is, again, a triumph in modern technical death metal. Anyway, The Guardian continues. it really is a great album, honestly.
I'm sure I'll never listen to it.
So Amazon announced it had decided to eliminate a number of positions across its devices and books businesses, and that basically spelt the end of The Book Depository, which is a shame because it was a massive repository of books. It was a marketplace seller officially, even though it was owned by Amazon. According to trade magazine The Bookseller, there is no ambiguity in what that trade publication stands for. An email sent out to vendors and publishing partners said it was going to close The Book Depository, that is. The last date customers will be able to place orders is the 26th of April. Over the coming weeks, we'll complete a winding down of the business, including discontinuing our listings as a marketplace seller and closing our website, it said. And that's not, I looked into this, it's not because people are buying fewer books. There was another Guardian story that I looked up, not by clicking on a link in the first story. I went and did separate research and just happened to find a story on The Guardian from about this time last year that said more than 212 million print books were sold in the UK a year earlier.
That's a lot.
That's the highest figure in a decade.
That's enough to sink a battleship, I reckon.
It may well be. And that's just print books. So that's not the issue. No, this is tied to the broader issue of, well, I mean, it's not even just Amazon making massive cuts at the moment to save money. All these tech companies are.
It's not the only thing Amazon's shut as well, because it's killed DP Review as well.
It has. And I know you're very, and that's for pornography fans, that's about, it's about cameras. That Amazon owned, which is a real shame. We knew in November the company was going to cut things in books and devices. We know that it's made cuts in video games. I think it cut about 100 people recently in the games division. Twitch, which Amazon owns, also laid off a bunch of people. And we know that it closed some physical bookstores to focus on groceries. So that's all a way of saying that this is part of a broader move. But I do think that it's quite significant and quite telling. And in a way, I want to say sad, but Amazon started life as selling books. And then this, there was a guy who worked at Amazon, I think it was, who started the Book Depository, and he left Amazon and he went and started up this rival company in 2004 to sell books. And then Amazon, presumably several years later, said, oh, you've done a very good job at rivaling us now, so we'll buy you. Thanks very much. And Amazon is still selling books. But now, I mean, Amazon's doing pharmaceuticals, it's making TV shows. If you go on the homepage of Amazon, you'd be forgiven thinking it's basically only an electronics store. Browse a bit more deeply and you're like, okay, it's a fashion retailer, but it's also where you can buy home goods. You could easily think that it wasn't actually a place that had its root in books. And that's fair enough. And maybe the reality is that if Amazon is less and less a go-to destination for books, then that's better for other outlets. Now, I don't think that's the case, but clearly the interest in books is still there.
Well, I just don't think that anyone thinks of Amazon as a book retailer anymore. I mean, books, it sells. I don't think for a minute that that's the first port of call for book people to go to. I mean, you'd rather go to a retailer, wouldn't you, and know that you're getting more money to the author. I mean, it's convenient.
You'd like that. But I still think the majority of people who shop online, when they think of books, they still go to Amazon.
Yes, I mean, I can't dispute that with any evidence. So, yeah, why not? Let's go for it. Frustrating, though, because, you know, authors need to be compensated for their exceptionally hard work writing a book. I've never written a book. It's very daunting.
Yes,
and,
I've
you know,
seen...
writing things down is sort of, well, it certainly was my job.
I've sat and watched a wife write a book, and more to the point, I've in my own home sat and watched my wife writing a book. That was a little joke there, Ian.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah,
you did. Okay, staring at other people's wives in coffee shops.
Yeah.
I've had this theory about Amazon, which is that Amazon wants to move away from things where it has to hold stock. And I believe this has been Amazon's strategy for years, where, you know, if it can have other people have stock and it can just redirect customers, but basically capture the customers and have someone else send it out, that's great. But that broke down when Amazon started saying, well, we'll fulfill those deliveries itself. But if you look at where all the money's going into, you know, things like Amazon Prime services and... digital streaming and Kindle ebooks and Audible and things, like a lot of that stuff doesn't require stock, it only requires servers, and a lot of the places that it's pulled out of in the you know, physically have been things where you have to keep a lot of stock for a long time, potentially in preference for things that have a faster turnover, like food. So
yeah,
you know,
and also where they're not actually warehousing it anyway.
Yeah.
They're getting someone else to do that. Morrison's mostly in this country.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could be right. You could be right on that. And I think it's a shame. I don't think I'm going to be sort of, you know, saying anything cutting edge here when I say that it's disappointing that Amazon buys things and then shuts them down. I noticed when they shut DP Review, the owner of Slashdot said, we'll buy it if you don't want it.
Oh, and they wouldn't sell it, would they?
Oh, no, they wouldn't sell it, because why would they? It's their proprietary thing. They'd rather shut it and remove it from the internet, losing that incredible resource of information, historical data that cannot be easily reworked. You know, there is no way to redo that unless you already have detailed reviews of cameras where you've done proper testing. It's gone. It'll be gone forever. I mean, sure, it might be on the Internet Archive, but we all know that's not the world's fastest service, and a lot of stuff tends to break. You might be able to find articles, but ultimately it's gone, and that's heartbreaking, because it's a lot of human endeavor that went into it. It's arguably a class leading testing site, and I think, you know, Amazon could have got some money for it. I mean, what's the point of shutting it and not doing anything with it? Like, those staff aren't staying on. So you might as well turn that into some sort of a return on the investment. Mm. You know, they've had a return on the investment for years because it's been driving affiliate revenue. But, you know, to shut it down and, you know, do nothing with it, I think is criminal.
Well, bringing
it, I mean, it's not literally criminal. There's no law against it. I just want to be quite clear about that.
Yes.
It's metaphorically a criminal act. Well, doesn't really work, does it?
To figuratively bring it back to Book Depository, I wanted to see how much this would impact me, benchmark of one. And it turns out that by searching my email archive, which for archive fans dates back to 1999, I have ordered a total of one books that came from the Book Depository.
They folded, Nate, because you didn't buy a second book.
It was in 2014. The book was A History of Japan, and I bought it when I lived in Ealing, for that is the delivery address that appeared in my email receipt. So I won't be affected, I don't believe. And also, I very rarely buy print books anymore because I buy audiobooks constantly, almost. And as I said before, that doesn't require stock. Not in the same way.
It doesn't. But, well, I don't know. Hopefully something will rise like a phoenix from the ashes and set up a bookstore. I don't know if that's something that's within Phoenix's abilities.
No, also phoenixes don't exist. Phoene. Oh, Phoeni.
Yes, if you must.
Thank you. I must.
I'm gonna let that one go because I imagine that is a Latin word.
If you want to learn more about Amazon, you should go and read The Everything Store by my boss, Brad Stone. In case he listens.
I don't think he does. I mean, I don't wish to be dismissive, but...
Mm-hmm. Well, Luna in our live chat says, I still prefer to go in a good bookshop and browse. I agree, except I went into the Waterstones on Piccadilly a few years ago and managed to get one of the staffers there to agree that the way bookshops are set up do not work for people who are used to browsing online, because I went in wanting to buy a book about Japanese history. In fact, it may even have been around the same time because I was at Wired. And they said, well, we have travel books. I said, well, I don't necessarily want a travel book. It might be history. Oh, that'd be in the history section. Yeah, but I'm not sure. And they agreed that actually not being able to walk into a bookshop and type Japan and see all the potential books that it has across the genres and writing styles was actually a disservice to their customers.
No, sorry, you can't have Phoeni. It's Greek.
Oh, that's a shame. That's a great shame. Well, let us know if you are a phoenix and you have risen from the ashes and you wish to tell us something. Do send us an email, hello@uktechshow.com, or that's the only choice.
Nate, Virgin Media suffered what can only be described as a catastrophic outage on its network last week. Nate knows about this because he had me on his telephone complaining in text form.
Oh, he did. He really did.
Details about what caused the problem at around 1 a.m. Tuesday morning from Virgin were, as always, sketchy in that they'd said nothing of any use to anyone. Many customers, me included, were annoyed about that, because it's just so classic Virgin. Hundreds of thousands of people potentially suffering and not a word from their Twitter, which was besieged, Nate, by angry customers who were struggling to use the internet. The problem wasn't the connection to Virgin's network itself, but something clearly more central. One must always blame DNS for these failures, because it's almost always DNS that is to blame. That's the beating heart of the internet, taking those domain names and translating them to lovely IP addresses. And a failure in this system can, of course, cause massive problems, or in some cases, no problems at all, because you might be using a completely different DNS setup, like Cloudflare or Google. I don't know what happened in this case, because by the time I'd started work at 9 a.m., it had cleared up. Only then to burp on Tuesday afternoon. And the BBC reports that 50,000 people submitted faults to Down Detector, which is a phenomenal amount of people complaining, given that Down Detector is not exactly what I'd call a mainstream site. No. And, you know, like probably not that many people follow it on Twitter, which is one of the main ways you report to them. You retweet the tweet if you're having the same problem. You can also go on the website and press a button, which I guess some people did. But I think that percentage is pretty high. It's also worth noting that Ofcom's recently increased the amount of compensation customers are entitled to, but not in this case, because you have to be offline for 2 days. The new amount is £9.33 a day, up from £8.48. But it's useless, because it wasn't long enough for any compo in this case. In real terms, I guess the outage wasn't actually severe enough to see home workers inconvenienced that badly. It was modest, but people up early with their kids trying to stream Peppa Pig would have been in for a disappointment. I did go on the Cloudflare website now. You might have some thoughts on this. Do you want to deliver some thoughts and then I'll tell you what Cloudflare had to say about it?
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting that it's significant enough for us to spend half a podcast talking about, but not quite significant for Ofcom to think it's even worth £20 worth of conversation. But please continue.
Well, I would argue that point as well, given that prices have just gone up from this month as well, because, you know, there is a retail price index increase that enables them to bump their prices up quite significantly, I believe. In fact, significantly enough for them to give people an opt-out if they wanted to leave.
For a 14% price hike, and not just Virgin, but to, you know, pretty much all companies that provide services per month like this.
I mean, it's disgusting. I hate it. But what can I do about it? Well, I can't do anything about it because those price rises will be everywhere and I'm not in the mood for switching from what is usually a fairly stable internet connection to something that's an unknown quantity. And I was warned by the previous owner of this house that ADSL or fiber around here is a disgrace, which I believe. So realistically, I'm a bit of a trapped boy, a stuck lad. Anyway, Cloudflare did more reporting on this than Virgin. Virgin Media hasn't released the root cause of the disruptions, but it has looked at BGP. BGP is a mechanism to exchange routing information between networks on the internet. The big routers that make up the internet, that make the internet work, have huge, constantly updated lists of possible routes that can be used to deliver each network packet to its final destination. Without BGP, internet routers wouldn't know what to do and the internet wouldn't exist. So they seem to think that it was something to do with this, that the BGP announcements from the NTL hardware, it is still NTL apparently, were basically non-existent during this period. So there's a graph on the site and it shows that it was there were lots of problems, basically. So it seems that if you want to know what's going on with Virgin, you pop over to Cloudflare and they'll just have an answer.
And BGP, for people not familiar, is Border Gateway Protocol.
Yes. They it's didn't like actually say that, although they do have an explainer on their site.
Do they? I just thought I would explain it.
No, it's very kind of you, because I didn't and you did, and that was good. So I don't know, really. I mean, I do find it particularly frustrating that Virgin never says anything or explains what it's going to do to prevent it from happening in the future. Like, I feel like when you have an issue like this, customers deserve to know that there's some process in place to prevent it from happening again, and not, ideally, twice on the same day.
No, it's problematic. And I used to have this problem quite a lot when I was with Virgin. I will point out that I had no such problems because I'm on GigaClear.
Yes, and that's lovely for you. But lots of us can't get an alternative fiber provider. Now, I will say this, and this has been something that's been on my mind quite a bit recently. I do think that these little local fiber providers are going to really give Virgin a run for its money, because they're a lot cheaper. They provide much faster speeds, including symmetrical upload.
Yeah.
I think as they roll out, they're going to have no end of customers switching from Virgin.
Well,
because let's be honest, Virgin TV is not anything to particularly write home about.
I would say that I agree, but the problem is that they've got to expand so quickly to capture enough customers that they can recoup that investment
Well, they do, but they are doing it, and it's not just one or two places. There, you know, every region in the country now seems to have one of these sort of local companies dealing with this. So it is happening.
Hmm. True. But I see what you mean. You mean on a local level, not as a
yeah, exactly. Oh, I see. And that's going to be the answer. It's going to be back to, you know, what originally the cable network in the UK looked like, where there were a number of different providers, and as time went on, they got more and more swallowed up by NTL and Telewest until NTL and Telewest merged, and there was only Virgin. So, you know, it's one of those things, I think, that as those small networks, you know, build, they'll develop quite a nice local offering. It'll be cheaper to maintain, I guess. It'll, you know, the responsiveness to that failures will be quicker. And people will be getting much better speeds for much less money. I mean, you're talking, what, 20, 30 quid for gigabit. It says a lot that the Virgin product is £50 or £60.
Well, Mike,
it is no better. In fact, much worse.
I have gigabit here, but I pay about 50 quid a month.
That's really pretty decent. That's sort of, I mean, I'm paying 30 something.
Yeah.
For $350.
It's like half that if you get half the speed. But it's something like £50 and I get 1 gig up and down simultaneously.
Yeah, I mean, I'd pay 50 quid for that. What I wouldn't do is pay Virgin 50 quid for 30 megs up and a gigabit down. Like, that's just not good enough. So that's one of the reasons I haven't carried on upgrading, because there was a time, and as you know, that I would just and you would do the same, but just automatically go for the best possible package, because there's something very delightful about downloading things at high speed, even if it's largely unnecessary for most people. But I feel like these fibre providers, until they all get bought by Virgin and rolled into that network, I feel like that could be a nice option for people. Although I will say, also, as I always say, those fibre providers are actually providing fibre. Virgin is not.
No. Mine is fibre into my house.
Yes. It's really mine is fibre into a cabinet 3 miles away. Mm. And a chonky coax to my door.
You're right about the options being there. I mean, I'm on GigaClear. Nick in our live chat says he's on City Fibre. My brother up in Scotland is on Hyperoptic. There are a lot of options here, and they are, as you say, growing in number. And there are quite a lot of rural ones as well. I mean, Openreach is still, you know, it's plugging away. And in fact, my mum's got fibre to the premises.
Why am I the only one that doesn't have it?
And she lives in a place where there are more cows than people. She's got fibre. And I'll tell you what, it's good. And it gets up to about 900 meg up and down. But not that she gets that package, but it's very reliable and very good, very well priced. She used to have a satellite on the side of the house provided by a local company. Anyway, the other thing, and the other reason I thought we could talk about this, is because I feel like broadband internet outages these days are far less problematic than they used to be, because we have smartphones and because many of us can tether our devices, that actually even in the earlier days when, you know, we were at CNET, you know, we didn't have, you know, I remember having a mobile contract that had 3G, and I had something like 30 megabytes of data a month on my account, and even when it increased, it would only be about a gigabyte, and that was when I was having a USB dongle plugged in the side of my Mac, and it was still only one gigabyte. Whereas now, we can tether an entire house if needed.
Yeah, I mean, look, I get what you're saying, but again, I would point out that that's not the case everywhere. My mobile reception's okay. I wouldn't say it's record breaking or anything. I'm still only getting 4G here on both my work and my home and my personal phone.
Oh, it's like you're a cave person.
It is like that, isn't it? But I've had a look online. It's Tube, isn't it, that's going to provide to me eventually. £25 a month, 900 megabits per second symmetrical.
Bloody hell.
Then £29 a month after that 18-month contract.
So less than 30 quid for basically gigabit up and down.
Yes. I mean, I can't tell you if...
That's
no
a
money?
Loss making. That is no. They'll be losing money on that, because the build cost alone will be more than a year's contract.
Probably, but they're... No, they're
definitely, 100%.
But when you offer someone a deal like that, when you offer them something that's good for the money, you will have their loyal custom for many, many years. They're probably banking on people never switching on, which they probably won't if it's good.
You'll also have the fiber having been built into the premises for future people as well.
Yes.
Which is part of the investment.
Yeah. And they don't care. They've got investment from some nameless venture capitalist. It doesn't matter to them, does it? So yeah, £25 a month. I cannot wait. If anyone who works at Tube is listening to this, please drop us an email and please tell me when I can expect to get this, because I want it now.
I expect a person in a hard hat and a shovel at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Yeah, yeah.
Not 9:30. I mean, 9.
I did once think about this. I thought, I wonder if the chairman of BT wanted better internet, whether they would just sort of plug it in for him. I bet they would. I'm not important though, so I can't see why they'd go out of their way, unless they wanted like some positive comments on this podcast, which they would get, because I'd be very pleased with a nearly gigabit service for £25 a month.
It's not bad, is it? Not bad.
No in-contract price rises, Nate.
Well, we'll leave that there.
Free installation, unlimited usage, no line rental.
Maybe we'll leave it here instead. Ian wanted to squeeze in a little ad there for Tube, apparently.
Well, it's not much use to anyone unless you live in Aldershot, Blackwater, Cambridge. No, I'm not reading the list out. Go on, play your sting.
Just wanted to point out that if you'd like to email us, you can do so at hello@uktechshow.com. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you, patrons, for supporting us at uktechshow.no. That's the email address, at patreon.com/uktechshow. We wouldn't be here without you, it's fair to say. And if you haven't left us a review recently, free listeners, that is the best way you can support us without being a patron. Just go and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Or
I think they've all done it now, though. That's the problem.
Well, do it again.
You can't.
Yes. Unless you really...
Well, once you've reviewed something, it's like you either have to change the score, which we really don't want to encourage, unless they're going from 4 stars to 5, which I find difficult to believe. We've been doing this so long now.
Yeah. Okay.
Do review us if you haven't. That'd be lovely.
Go and get somebody else to listen to the show and then force them to leave a review. That would be very helpful. Thank you in advance for that. If you are a patron, though, you're about to hear our third discussion story. And brace yourself, people. I'm going to do the impossible, and I'm going to try and justify why I have, yes, subscribed to Twitter Blue. Not only did I successfully justify just now why I subscribed to Twitter Blue.
It was partially successful.
Wasn't it? I also explained quite a lot about my recent trouble crashing American food ordering systems by having the audacity to ask for something without cheese on it. So I hope you all greatly enjoyed that. I would like to flag that we have a very good friend of the show. His name's Tom Merritt. He produces Daily Tech News Show every day of the week, at least in some form. And he's going to tell us what we could be listening to if we go and check out the archive this week, he says, trying to press play on the file and failing miserably because of a bloody cookie pop-up. Yes, I accept cookies. Obviously, I accept cookies.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, why tech has not increased productivity since 2005, but why that's about to change. Google adds, then removes a cap on the number of files you can store in Google Drive. Why Nintendo is cooling on mobile and whether its strategy can survive the world of cloud gaming. A city mayor threatens to sue ChatGPT for defamation. And Tim Stevens gives us the scoop on alternative fuels. Turns out hydrogen may yet have a future. All that and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
He's not wrong. Okay, would you like to do the outro?
Sure. I've run out of things to say. That's the problem with doing a podcast. By the end of it, you've said it all.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.